Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You may have heard our story a few weeks back about golf and the fact that the number of people playing golf in the U.S. is down. According to a study from the National Golf Foundation, the number of people who played golf at least once in 2015 was 24.1 million, down from a peak of 30 million in 2005. We talked about some of the reasons for that, and we got a note from the head of the PGA of America. So for our View from the Top this week, part of our series of conversations with leaders, we're joined from West Palm Beach, Florida, by Pete Bevacqua, the CEO of the PGA of America. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, and you actually reached out to us when you heard our story about the decline in the number of golfers who keep playing. You say that is not the whole picture. So what is the whole picture?
Well, it's interesting. You know, golf, we don't want to take a Pollyanna approach. We know we have our challenges. We know for the PGA of America, we represent the 28,000 professionals around the country. And we're trying to do everything to serve our members and to grow the game. And we feel that right now, though, there is a great energy in this sport. We have Grow the Game initiatives that are working. We have more children in the game. A great fact there is that since 2010, we have roughly 500,000 more kids in the game. And we see these programs that they're working, that they're bringing more kids into the game. We're trying to get more women into the game. We're trying to bring more diversity into the game. And a lot of the negativity that came out when the NGF study was issued a few weeks back, focused on a potential decline in the overall number of golfers who played in 2015. That's only part of the story. There really are a lot of great things going on in the game right now.
Well, what about the part of the story, though, that they stressed in their report, the National Golf Foundation, that a lot of people are trying golf, but not as many are staying with it?
Yeah, I would say, you know, that I would have to disagree with that. Certainly a lot of people are trying golf. If over 24 million people played golf, according to that study and according to our own research, we know about 37, 38 million people are interested in golf. We understand we have our challenges. And for instance, Jeremy, we think one of the great hurdles that we need to clear and to cope with is time. Golf is a game that takes time, and as you know, people in the contemporary American society feel as though they have less time than ever. So we're trying to tell people golf doesn't always need to be a 9-hole or an 18-hole experience. We have to be smart. We have to understand that people do things in 30, 60, 90-minute segments.
Well, how do you do that with golf, though, besides mini golf, which I'm very well versed in? you could do that in an hour.
Mini golf is fun. I actually played last weekend with my three children. But, you know, so if people are doing things in those types of segments, whether it's going to a yoga class or watching something on Netflix, golf has to understand that. And we have to show people that you can have that type of experience. Maybe you can take a lesson from a PGA professional for 30 minutes. You can go play two, three, four holes after work with your spouse or your children. And that doesn't mean that we in any way want to change the overall essence of the game. But to be able to make the funnel into the game as big as possible.
But if I wanted to go out and play at the vast majority of courses today, the course fee could be over $100, even at public courses. Club rental could be $50 or more. I'd probably need a lesson. And then, you know, in most places right now, it would take many hours to play. How do you get past that? Because it's not like you can put out an edict that says, okay, everybody, all golf courses around the country, all these private clubs, you should now be offering, you know, 1 hour play times.
We certainly can't issue an edict, but we definitely have the support of the industry and our membership, and people understand that we have to bring more people into the game. And certainly there are private golf courses around this country where you need to be a member. But the vast majority of the golf played in this country is played on public golf courses. And it really is a misunderstanding about the expense of the game. Now, golf equipment can be expensive if you're going out and buying the very best equipment. And green fees at some of the premier golf courses around this country or can be north of $100. But there are endless opportunities in golf to play for green fees significantly lower than that. And we represent the PGA of America. We represent those 28,000 PGA professionals, Jeremy, who are literally getting up every day and saying, how can we grow this game? How can we introduce this game to more people? How can we make it more accessible, more welcoming, and quite frankly, bring more diversity into the game as well?
We're speaking with Pete Bevacqua, who's the CEO of the PGA of America. And I want to ask you about what you just said about bringing more women, more minorities into the game. I was just in Dallas. I was with a good friend of mine who's a huge golfer, such a big golfer that she and her family live so close that they can just ride across the street to their local golf course. But she took me through one of the fancy neighborhoods in Dallas and passed by a course and she said, oh, this course is men only and they only allow women in one day a year so that they can go and buy presents for their husbands. How do you get around that? Because that really seems pretty antiquated in 2016.
Well, different clubs have different rules, but I would tell you that the industry understands, certainly the PGA of America, part of the fundamental tenet of our strategic plan is we understand that we need more diversity in this game. We need more diversity in terms of who our PGA of America professionals are, what our staff is like at the PGA of America headquarters. The face of the game needs to change to reflect the face of American society. And if we don't, golf will become less relevant over the course of the next 50 or 100 years. I think in the past, perhaps golf has been a little guilty of a they'll come to us mentality. We have to go out and be more aggressive and more progressive in our approach of bringing the game to others. And you do that by bringing it into different communities, bringing it into schools, and making sure that we can rely on the wonderful golf events that people watch to get the message out to more and more people.
So how big of a problem is it then that Tiger Woods is not the face of the game anymore? Because I was looking back and there's a National Minority Golf Association report that said there were 700,000 African Americans playing golf in 1992 and 4 million in 1998 after Tiger won his first major. Has his departure from being the top golfer in the world been a real problem for you in terms of attracting minorities and all kinds of people who are interested because he's such a star?
Well, I think one of the questions that everyone always asks themselves is what would the golf landscape look in a post-Tiger world? And I'm one of the first people to say that I hope and truly believe we have not heard the end of Tiger Woods. And the golf industry needs Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger is a transcendent athlete. When you look back over the course of the last 100 years and you think about those athletes that are really transcendent, maybe it's a Babe Ruth, a Muhammad Ali, a Michael Jordan. In golf, we had Arnold Palmer, we had Jack Nicklaus. And Tiger was that type of person that comes along every few generations and just really rewrites the record book. But the great news is now we have people like Jason Day and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth on the men's side and Lydia Ko and Michelle Wee. And these people have kind of taken the torch from Tiger and, you know, they're kind of bringing that forward. But, you know, Tiger is still very much around. And I certainly, for one, don't think we've seen the end of Tiger Woods.
I want to ask you about one more thing, and that is the sort of environmental concerns that some people have about golf. They go to a place like Las Vegas or Palm Springs, especially now in the middle of a big drought in California, and you see these lush golf courses. And a lot of people have a problem with that and say, you know, why are we using this water to keep these golf courses nice and fresh and beautiful for a bunch of rich people?
Yeah, but that's kind of – golf can often be an easy target for people who don't understand the game and don't understand that the impact golf has on the economy in the United States. Golf is not a pastime for an elite pocket of people in this country, and that really is something, a perception that we need to fight in golf. Golf is a $70 billion economic industry in this country that's responsible for well over 2 million jobs. People, you know, I always say, and when I say this, people always kind of scratch their heads because they can't believe it, but charitable golf events in this country raise $3.8 to $3.9 billion a year. Golf actually has an incredibly good environmental story to tell, but there's no secret. Water usage and sustainability are key factors, particularly in parts of this country if you look in the Southwest, which you mentioned. But we're aware of that. We're aware of that. We're working with our partners at the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. And golf understands that we have to be environmentally sound. We have to be sustainable. And those are critical factors to the overall health of the game as we move forward.
Well, what do you think would make the courses more sustainable? Is there something that you would suggest that courses in drought-stricken areas should do to be more environmentally friendly?
Well, I think people have to understand that golf courses don't always need to be green and lush. That's great if you can do it. Golf courses don't always need to be in major championship condition. Golf can be fun if played on firm and fast fairways. I think people have to really understand what amount of acreage are you actually using at a particular facility. There's great data out there and great studies where you can analyze a particular golf course and the amount of play and where people are playing, where they're hitting their golf ball, and some have been able to shrink the overall acreage that they need to water. So there are real sound data out there and methodologies and programs to make sure that you can be as responsible and as environmentally sensitive as possible, but still have a great golf experience.
Pete Bevacqua, before I let you go, make some news for me. What's your favorite course in the country?
Boy, that's a good question, a loaded question. I would say there's a place up in Maine called Cape Arundel that is a Walter Travis design and just a beautiful golf course. If you stretch it out, it's about 6,000 yards, but it's beautiful. It's scenic. It's in one of my favorite places in the country, and I've never had anything but a wonderful time when I'm there. And they have a tremendous PGA professional, Ken Rayner, who is there, and he's a good friend.
That's Pete Bevacqua, the CEO of the PGA of America. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, I really appreciate it, Jeremy. Thank you for having me on.